This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, a show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, joy, joy. Hello everyone and welcome to Well, 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 brought to you live every Tuesday from midday. My name is Jessie and I'm here with two of my co-hosts, Anthony and Adam. How are we today, boys?
I'm pretty good.
Fantastic.
Great, and thanks to Adam for panelling for me. Absolute pro over there. Thank you, Steve, for the news and to Gazman for the morning show. So we'll just tell you about what Well, Well, Well is about.
So at Well, 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 we talk about topics related to sex, health and well-being in the GLBTI community. So all matters, very interesting topics that we discuss, and we've got an interesting one today.
Exactly. And obviously, if you guys are out there and you think of any topics that you think that we're not covering or we should be covering, or if there's conversations happening in the community, obviously just get in contact with us. But what is on the show today, Jessie?
So today we've got our very own Budi Sidato from the Health Promotion Team at FAT.
Yay!
He's coming in to talk to us about some of the work he does as well as his experience as a GLBTIQ individual from a cold background. So just to break down, cold referring to culturally and linguistically diverse.
And we were having a very interesting conversation before we came on about what cold means, but I think we'll get into that a little bit further on. But obviously there was a conference. We had Wendy Berkshire on last week, and she spoke to us about a conference that VAC had put on
In partnership with Beyond Blue and some others.
Yeah.
It was the Lesbian, Bisexual and Queer Women's Health Conference.
Yeah, and you went to that, Jessie, did you?
Yeah, I did. So I also just wanted to give a shout out to all my colleagues at VAC who organised this, as well as the work that we did in partnership with Beyond Blue. I think it was actually really successful. And there's definitely been talks about this continuing in the future, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah, what was your favourite bit?
My favourite bit, let me see. Well, the food was awesome. But actually, I really liked how when they were split up into streams, they were such a diverse range of topics, you know, going from pap smears to sexuality and just all kinds of stuff that I guess you wouldn't get your own stream if you went to a general conference. So I really liked that aspect of it. And just networking. We've got there were how many?
200 people there.
Yeah, 200 people there. And that was really impressive, actually. Yeah.
It was a great opportunity for networking for people in the sector and other interested parties. And there were some discussions at that conference about the cold community for queer women. And we're going to talk about the cold community in terms of, is it just gay men or the GLBTI community today?
Well, I guess we're going to be talking a lot of it from Budi's perspective.
Right.
So, you know, that'll be from gay men, but we'll definitely explore other areas of it for sure.
And so if people want to get involved in the conversation that we're going to have today, how can they do that, guys?
Well, they can do that a number of ways. You can like us.
A plethora of ways.
A plethora.
Not a number.
That's for you, Tex.
That's for Tex.
We miss you, Tex. You can like us at facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy, or you can give us a call on 1300-JOY-949. Send us an email if you like onair@joy.org.au, or just simply send us an SMS at 0427-JOY-949. And if you must, if you have any energy left, you can tweet us at wellwellwelljoy. Is there a hashtag there somewhere? I don't know about Twitter.
There isn't a hashtag.
Well, I guess it's called a handle.
It's a handle.
Okay, not familiar. But lots of ways to get involved, guys.
Yeah, definitely. And if Tex is listening, which most of you do know Tex, I hope you a speedy recovery and that you are feeling better. We have got Hero by Evermore.
And this is for you, Tex, because you're my hero.
Hero.
Well, 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 bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being on Joy 94.9. On Joy 94.9.
Joy, joy. Hi, everyone. So I would like to say a very warm welcome to Budi from the Health Promotion Team at VAC.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Yeah, it's been a while since I'm in the studio, so it's a bit
it's still the same.
I know. You must feel right at home then. So can you just tell us a bit about yourself and your background, Woody?
How long do we have? We have 1 second. So obviously my name is Woody and I'm the peer education coordinator at VIC. And part of my work is to liaise and establish relationships with different multicultural groups that we have in Melbourne, and some of them including the Hello Melbourne, the Marhaba for the Muslim queer, and the Greek and gay group as well. So that's what I do with regards to the cult communities.
And I've detected an accent. So can you tell us a little bit about your cultural background?
It's very subtle, isn't it?
It's just part of my acting class is to put an accent on my
word. Make you more appealing.
Exactly. Just keep it relevant to the topic today. So I grew up in Indonesia. I was born in Indonesia. I grew up in Indonesia. And I came here back in 1998 when I was doing my undergrad study at Monash Uni. And I've been here since, I don't know, bad in math, about 15 years, 16 years that I've been in Melbourne.
Okay. And so was there a massive culture shock coming from Indonesia? Obviously, you were coming across, as you said, to start your undergraduate. Mm. So obviously, at first, it's coming to Australia. Had you been here before or?
Only for a short visit. So back in 96 or 97, I just came here for a holiday and also to check it out, to suss it out. So I went to Sydney and Melbourne with my mum. And after looking at Sydney and Melbourne, then decided to...
We won.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
We always do.
Well, you know, it wasn't a competition as such, but there's something about Melbourne that really likes, that I really like. So then just moved to Melbourne and I did my undergrad for 3.5 years. And I think to answer your question in regards to culture shock, is the first year that was the hardest year, because that's when I tried to reestablish myself and tried to find my foot in Melbourne without knowing a lot of people.
Could you speak English, Buddy, when you came to Australia?
You'll be surprised how good my English was.
Okay.
But basically, there's not much change since then. You know, I got more vocabulary now, but I was very comfortable speaking English back then. And as part of the education as well, all of us who wanted to go to Australia to study, we have to do a 9-month course, and that's all delivered in English. So they call it the foundation year or the transition course, basically, just so we feel comfortable and confident to speak in language.
Yeah, I saw the Four Corners story last night where international students come across and work so bloody hard just to get on top of the English language, let alone the course that they're studying and the material there. But
well, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of things, I often criticize myself for my spelling mistakes and my grammar mistakes, but yeah, even those like Anglo-Australians are still struggling with it, because English is such a complex language. So
some of us here in Australia speak English and some speak Australian.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a bit of a difference there.
Well, you know, talking about culture shock, there's one thing that I had to learn very, very quickly. I simply didn't understand some of the expressions, and I still don't understand some of the
it's
expressions.
It's okay, you and I both, Buddy.
Exactly. She'd be right.
Just got to
She'd
learn.
Be right.
Exactly.
Buddy, can I ask, with your move to Australia, you talked about the culture shock, and I'm thinking about identity. And when we talk about the cold community, we think about the different identities, perhaps ethnic and ethnic identities. You identify as a gay man. You also have that part of your identity. Was that part of the motivation to come to Australia here? Is it? What's the climate like? The social climate like in Indonesia?
Look, it definitely play a part. It wasn't the only thing. I mean, the most thing was about given the opportunity to study overseas and took on that opportunity. I think I was thinking in my head, well, it will be very, very stupid if I don't. And so I did that. And definitely the gay part was there as well, just an opportunity to explore my sexuality. But my story is a bit unique because I was already out before I came to Australia. I already have social friends and I was out in the community. I didn't tell my parents back then, but I was already involved in the community. So, you know, yes and no in a way to answer your question.
Okay. Perfectly done. Like a politician, yes and no. But this is Well on Joy 94.9.
Well, on Joy 94.9.
We're here back with Woody Sedato, who's sharing some of his experience as a GLBTIQ individual from a cult background and some of the work he does. So what are the differences in the gay culture and visibility of the gay community? We were just kind of finishing off that topic before.
In Indonesia.
In comparison.
Okay, so let's go back to Indonesia. So when I came out socially in 97, the gay culture that I witnessed back then was thriving but still underground. So I hang out with my gay friends and we'll be going to some dark alley to the back of a club to entry.
Wow. I know where that story was going.
Yeah, it's very PG.
Very adventurous.
And you know, in Indonesia back then, there was still quite a lot of activities and we will be in the club and we'll be having fun with ourselves. Now, when I lived back in Indonesia in 2010, I believe, 2010-2011, the gay culture was quite different. There's obviously more out gay men out there. There's more visibility. But because of the political, cultural, and religious environment as well, a lot of the clubs have been closed because they see it as a place where people took drugs and drink alcohol. And in a Muslim-majority country, that's seen as a no-no. But it's still there. This is my personal experience. I find it a bit difficult to find a group of gay men and finding a place to socialize without feeling that other people are making fun of us or look down on us. But once I find a connection, once I find an entry, if you can say it that way, to the community, it's just opened up a whole new set of friendships. And I'm still in touch with them until now.
So because clubs isn't what the gay community is only. I mean, it is. I guess it is a big part of how we celebrate and how we enjoy our recreational time and that sort of thing. And some people do associate the gay community with the clubs. I'm just wondering if Indonesia, that was a place where gay men could actually get together and meet other gay men, because it largely wasn't socially accepted, so they wouldn't have necessarily public forums for them to meet. And now with the closure of these clubs, has it driven the gay community underground more now?
Look, I don't think it's driven the gay community underground more. I think what it does is it created a new set of social environment or social settings where a lot of the gay men hang out. And look, when I said clubs as the place for gay men to hang out, I mean, that's my experience. You know, I was only 17. The legal age was 17. So, of course, that was the only place I wanted to be.
I still go.
but gay men hang out in public places, in parks, in cafes, and that's what I did back in 2010, because I found that's where the new social setting is. The new social setting is a designated cafe where a lot of gay men hang out on Saturday night and Friday night. And so the clubs, even though the clubs are closing, if you know the right people, and if not the right people, but if you know some people who can introduce you to a variety of individuals and their social network, then it's very easy to find somewhere where we can hang out, we can be who we are, and we just basically be boys.
So what was it like then coming to Australia and sort of looking around and sort of, what did you notice? Sort of rainbow flags on shop windows or what? I mean, I'm just wondering, what was your experience in noticing the gay community here in Melbourne?
So back in 98, 99, I mean, the gay community was very much alive. This is my view. The very much alive Commercial Road was basically the designated zone.
It was the good old days.
It was back in the good old days. Yep. You know,
Three Faces.
Three Faces. Oh. All those places.
Freakazoid.
Yep. I mean,
Dome.
Yeah. You know, I was allowed to mention those. But all those places. So my experience coming here and being part of that culture and that community was very much positive. It gave me the reinforcement that this is who I am, this is my community, this is where I belong. Of course, we all know since then, with the closure of a lot of places, a lot of commercial businesses, and even in 2015 now, if we got an overseas visitor asking us where do gay people hang out in Melbourne, it will be a bit difficult to pinpoint it. So yes, there has been changes. I forgot what the question is.
Right. No, you've given us a bit of a snapshot of that. We're talking to Buddhi Siddhartha from the Victorian AIDS Council, the peer education program, and health promotion. So we're going to come back after this and come back to the conversation after these messages.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Dolly Diamond, Joy 94.9. It's my ninth favourite radio station.
Oh, we love Dolly.
Hi, Dolly. This is Well 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 on Joy 94.9. And that was I'm Still Standing by Elton John. And you were busting out a move there,
that
Anthony.
That was for me. Thank you for that.
Well, we're chatting with Buddy Sidato from the Health Promotion Program at the Victorian AIDS Council. And I guess one of the really interesting aspects, I think, about coming from a cold background is, I guess, it's a well-talked about sort of discursive within the community around sexual racism. So can you tell us how you would define sexual racism and maybe what some of your experiences have been?
I'm glad you said how I define it, because sexual racism is still a contentious issue within the community. So it's, yeah, you don't have to snap your finger.
We're on radio, people didn't know that.
So my definition of sexual racism is basically the use of racial stereotypes to specifically exclude individuals from a specific racial group. I know it sounds a bit going around about the term, but that's how I define it. So in my work with Gay Asian Proud, the use of sexual racism is the use of racial stereotypes about Asian men, that Asian men in the Western context have been so emasculated and being constructed as being effeminate men that some people, without knowing our personality and our attributes, exclude us based on that assumption. And we were chatting in the studio before about the use of straight acting and the pursuit of masculine ideals that exist in the gay sexual scene. And with the effeminization of gay Asian men, I think I'm saying it right, or the emasculation of gay Asian men, that put us in a position where some people automatically exclude us from the options because we're not seen as being masculine. The thing is, who defined masculinity? Is there a clear guidelines about what masculine is? And talking about cross-cultural interpretation of masculinity, masculinity can be defined in so many different ways depending on the context. So using Indonesia as an example, the way masculine men in Indonesian culture, and by Indonesian culture I'm only talking about the one that I know, because we are a multi-ethnic country, masculinity is not always about physical appearance or behaviors. Masculinity is also about the ability to provide for your family, the ability to maintain a good balance between family life and work life. That doesn't necessarily apply in Australian context. Australian context is very much a blokey kind of AFL goers, NRL type of masculinity. So
nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. But what I'm saying is, when we talk about masculinity, we have to also understand the context, the cultural context where it exists, and why is it, and this understanding can explain why some men who come to Australia from a different country find it confronting, because in their countries they might consider themselves being masculine.
Yes, that's a good point, because I agree that here in Australia anyway, we do, when we think about masculinity, we do have a particular image that gets conjured up, and this is largely influenced by all sorts of things, you know, pop culture and various images that we see. And it's interesting that you said, Buddy, that people from Indonesia or perhaps other Asian countries come to Australia and already they feel excluded from having sort of group membership, to being considered as male and masculine, just because they don't fit this ideal that we have sort of created here in Australia.
It is true. And when we're talking about sexual racism, so we're talking about a broader kind of context of sexual racism as well. It doesn't just stop in the gay community. And in the wider society, there is sexual racism, especially with emasculation of gay Asian men, even in the heterosexual community. If there's a white woman, as I'm generalizing here, so bear with me. Yeah. If there's a white woman dating an Asian man, the context, some people will make snide remarks. Why are you wanting to date a man who are not masculine? Why are you wanting to date a man who doesn't have a social standing in our society?
Right. So I just want to interject there. You're making a very strong connection between the fact that this sexual racism is kind of in place because it's very associated with masculinity. So do you think it is that is the main thing, and that race is not actually, and skin color and culture and stuff like that, don't you think that also plays a large role in sexual racism and not just the masculinity thing?
Absolutely. The masculinity and femininity is just one aspect of it. And you're spot on. There are so many different things. Racial stereotypes are created because one group feels the need to justify the degradation and the injustice that they place on a different group. Mm. That's just the basic foundation of it. So when we're talking about bisexual racism, yes, in a gay sexual culture, what I find, masculinity plays a big part of it. But there's also other things. You know, there's also these economic differences. And when people see an Asian white gay couples, most often than not, they make an assumption that one person, usually it is the Asian person, must be brought into Australia as a male order bride, and that stereotypes also exist in the heterosexual community, you know, and that stems from the assumption that the Australian partner is the one with the economic capital. And even within some ethnic communities, if for marrying out of the community, if I can say that, for having a partner who's not part of that community, the people will try to rationalize it and finding justification on their stigma and prejudice against that individual. Why would an Asian woman date a white man? Probably because that woman wants to be wants to step up the social ladder and wants to gain access to the social and economic capital of the white man.
So these are the judgments that are made, the stereotypes.
Absolutely,
definitely.
And so obviously we're talking about it in sort of like a conceptual way, but how has that played out? So obviously everybody's on an app, some sort of an app these days, social hooking.
Some of us have
social networking sites. Social networking sites. So obviously, you do come across Asians, femmes, so talking about the masculinity as well, or a particular race that's pointed out. So how does that actually affect you specifically?
And that's part of the cultural shock as well. And I'm still having this conversation with members of the Gay Asian Proud, that shock and that disbelief that all of a sudden we're just being excluded, not because of anything that we've done, but because of our race. And it can create a damaging and long-lasting impact on our psyche and on the way we see ourselves and the way we see our place in the community. So when even until now, when I see a profile that says no Asian...
And no offense as well. No Asians, no offense.
Asian, no offense. It's just a preference. And my one of my volunteers actually put it nicely to me. It is a preference if you consider everyone to be equally attractive.
Yeah.
But it becomes a discrimination if you don't even consider a particular group attractive, not because of anything, but because of these existing racial stereotypes. Now, it is a contentious issue, and people will just go back and forth.
Mm. Yeah.
But
about the whole preference thing?
About the whole preference thing, yeah. Whether it's preference, whether it's discrimination. One thing I'm asking people to think about is have a look at your own understanding of your sexual desire and have an understanding that our sexual desires actually, part of it is actually socially constructed. If we grew up in the current environment, in current culture that we are in, we grew up with a white-dominated image of standard of beauty. And of course, our preference, if you say that, or the way we see what beautiful is, will be influenced by that.
Yeah, I agree that our physical characteristics are socially constructed. I think there's an example with, I think it's Japan or something, where they consider lighter color skin to be associated with a higher social status
and attractiveness. China.
Right.
Well, and also in
Australia, I guess we would consider tan skin to be more sort of youthful and all that sort of stuff. So.
Well, absolutely. And we've been having a lot of discussions about, because I grew up in Indonesia and Southeast Asia, it's a lot of people want to have a bleaching, whitening skin. Look, part of it could be as a result of colonialism, but the other part as well got to do with class. Mm-hmm. So the upper class, obviously, right. They don't work in the field, they don't work in the farm. So they're fair. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are striving for because they don't want to be seen as belonging to a lower social class.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of this complexity that I find it really amazing and really powerful to unpack and to understand. I'm not, this is what I always say to people, I'm not asking everyone to like Asian men. I'm not asking everyone to suddenly, you know, decided, oh, okay, well, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to do the politically correct thing, and I'm going to do this, this, and this. What I'm asking is, think about the last thing, the emotional impact that you can, you know, you create by excluding someone specifically based on race without even wanting to have an understanding or wanting to know the personality of that person.
Mm-hmm. And I think just to extend that, I think that's a good point, but I don't think we're often aware of the bias that we have. A lot of this stuff can be largely unconscious, that we have a very strong bias for one particular race over than the other, perhaps. And the thing about the Grindr app, how they put, what was it, no Asians, no offence, I think to put it out there so explicitly does demonstrate a sense of racism, and I think that if you're part of a privileged group, it's really difficult to really understand what that looks like and how it's experienced on a day-to-day basis.
No, I agree. And even if you don't find Asian men attractive, don't even say it. You know, just make it open for everyone.
I do have a quick question that's just come in regarding sexual racism. So what about people who vocalise a fetish for specific race? So more about preference and whatnot.
Well, what we might do is we might actually listen to a couple of quick community service announcements and get right back into that question.
Okay.
This is Well 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 on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Love that song. Ooh. But before we got into break, we had a question. What was the question again, Jessie?
So what about people who vocalise fetish for sex-specific races, and what advice would you give to people who want to express that online in apps and in profiles?
Oh, God, I am not here to give advice to anyone.
Leave now.
Exactly. Well, I only have 2 minutes. So sexual fetish is actually quite an interesting thing, because one of the effects of sexual racism, so I've been talking about sexual racism to basically reject individuals based on their specific race. The other part of it is about fetishization as well. So it's basically operating on the same premise. The use of racial stereotypes to fetishize or to make members of a particular racial group more desirable than others. So once again, going back to my experience as a gay Asian man, the effeminization or the emasculation of gay Asian men has resulted in me being rejected because I'm not seen as masculine, and being fetishized because they just assume that I'm going to be this effeminate, demure, passive, submissive person. Right. And
it ain't true.
And it is a problematic. It's a problem. And the same thing with hypermasculinization as well. The hypermasculinization of black men, the hypermasculinization of men from the Mediterranean background. And I can't pronounce that word.
Yes.
And that creates a problem as well, because it's basically stripping people of their individuality, stripping people of their personal characteristics and attributes, and narrow it down based on this cultural and racial fantasy about their not only masculinity or femininity, but also sexual prowess.
That's exactly right, because I mean, it is perception, and it is about a fantasy as well, and obviously that may not necessarily translate into the reality when you do catch up or hook up in whatever format that may be.
Yeah, and this is the thing about sexual racism, because once again, it is the use of assumptions, these socially, culturally, racial assumptions that we keep enforcing. And by we, I'm including myself in it. I'm a member of society. I also been influenced by the racial stereotypes that exist. Once again, what I'm asking is a greater awareness, so we understand where our desire coming from. We understand our own stigma and prejudice as members of society, and we all can work towards not only challenging our own, but also striving towards ending it in a bigger picture, or at least reducing the negative impact of racism in society.
Well, yeah, great. Thanks.
Well, I feel like I'm a politician just then.
Well said, Woody.
Absolutely, well said.
I totally agree. And it's a great conversation we've had today. And I think it's good for us to keep this in mind and to try and understand the way our view of other people and their races influence our decisions around how we think of them and the way we interact with them. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we go on to the next song, I just want to, can we just quickly talk about the Cold Forum that's coming up on the 30th of April?
Absolutely. So the 30th of April, VIC is having a community forum. It's called Same, Same, But Different. It will be held at the Multicultural Hub, and it's basically providing a platform for members of the community who are of culturally and linguistically diverse background to talk about their experience, to talk about how they navigate their sexuality and cultural identity in Australia. I won't be speaking because I think I spoke enough, but we will have a great lineup. So we have Dr. Maria Palota Chiaroli to moderate it. We have Shannon Wong, we have Leah Incognita, Raina Peterson, oh, I can't even remember her surname now,
Raina Peterson
and Monique Hamid, and we also have Dr. Gilbert Kaluuya coming specifically from South Australia to speak in this forum. So it's free, it starts at 6:30, come along and let's continue the discussion, because that's what we need to do, we need to keep talking and raise the issue.
And yeah. So where can people find out more about the forum specifically, so whether it costs anything, whether it's food or drinks or times and stuff like that, where can they find out more info?
So all you have to do is go to the VAC website, www.vac.org.au.
And check out the events on that page, and it'll be pretty easy to find. So, if you're interested, please come along and check it out. We have got...
It's Troublemaker by Teo Cruz coming up next. But, Buddy, thanks very much for coming in today. It's been
my pleasure.
Absolute joy.
Thank you, Buddy. Great the discussion.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well and Joy 94.9. We've just had a text message come in from Nick from Sandringham. Ooh. It's very cute. Hi, guys. Loving the show. Anthony sounds cute.
Ooh. Oh. Nothing wrong with your hearing.
I've participated in peer groups at VAC, and it helped me at a very difficult time in my life. It felt safer that the group was facilitated by community peers. Thanks for that, Nick.
Yeah,
really
good point.
Appreciate
good
your
point.
Message.
Yeah, and I think as well, there's something else that we do need to mention just quickly before we go. Obviously, we had a really interesting conversation about culturally and linguistically diverse perceptions, assumptions, sexual racism, sexual fetishization, and I can never say that word correctly. Grant O'Sullivan would always correct me on how to say it. But I think we've got some prep info sessions which are coming up rather soon, and there's actually going to be two of them. Prep's thing that's happening through the community at the minute in terms of people having a conversation about it. So VAC are putting on two information sessions for the community. It's going to be a very informal conversation. So it's not going to be one of the forums that you might have attended before. It's just going to be a laid-back conversation. There will be Tuesday the 21st of April at the Peter Knight Centre, which is the Victorian AIDS Council's place in South Yarra, which is 6 Claremont Street, from 6:30pm till 7:30pm. But then there'll also be one on Sunday the 26th of April at Pronto, which is our rapid HIV testing facility, and that's 175 Rose Street in Fitzroy, from 2pm till 3pm. So if you can't make it on a weeknight, you can come on a weekend, hopefully.
Sounds good. It's always changing, the information with PrEP, isn't it?
It is always changing, and I think might even have an inside track on someone coming out in the next few months to have a conversation about one of the most exciting PrEP trials that has been going on. But
well,
stay tuned.
Can't wait for that.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for that. But,
well, thanks everyone for hanging out with us for the past hour. This is Jesse, Adam and Anthony, part of the Well Well team from VAC. Take care, everyone, and you're listening to Joy 94.9. See you next Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Go Pies.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.